court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia. Two Dudes Perspective on Legal Frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
Well, how's it going today, Tommy?
Well, not too bad. Down here in the new studio, got the new lights up, got extra room all cleared out, got extra padding hung up to dull the noise, bouncing around type sounds.
No tinging.
No tinging.
I just had a delicious Frost Top root beer.
Oh, yeah. I had some from yesterday left over, and I know how much my little buddy loves root beer.
I do like me some root beer.
Just don't ask for two when my dad's around.
That's right.
He learned that lesson young.
I don't know if he meant it or not.
He seemed pretty serious.
So this episode, we decided we'd kind of do something a little bit different. I guess it's not too different, but it's kind of taking a view from a different side of the bench, so to speak.
We're going to go behind the bench.
That's right. We're going to talk about judges.
Yeah. Here come the judge. Here come the judge. Order in the court because here come the judge.
And
do you remember where that's from?
What is that from?
That's from the old Rowan and Martin Laugh-In.
Oh, that's a little bit before my time.
Was it?
Yeah.
That was a bit they used to do. I don't know. I want to say that it was Flip Wilson did it or something, but if you remember who Flip Wilson was.
You told me that before, I think, in episode 13 or so.
Oh, okay. Well, you remember back that far, huh?
I do, but I don't remember who he was. I just remember you told me about it.
He was a comedian, and he was hilarious.
This idea kind of came to us. It was suggested on our Facebook. Well, it wasn't really suggested, but there was a story posted on Facebook about this judge in Detroit who won an election. And then basically before got sworn in, but then never actually even heard a case for 3 or 4 months because she requested some time off for vacation and didn't go in. Then she said, no, I'm sick and whatever. And then, so she was basically collecting a paycheck for not doing anything.
For doing nothing.
Yes.
Yeah. Joseph Atwell sent that in to us posted that on our Facebook page. And here's a judge earning a 6-figure salary and never even shows up and hears a case. And they've got, in this court district, they evidently have 30 judges, and they're all backed up, all the case logs for all 30 judges, and of course, here's this one not doing anything.
Yeah.
And all the rest of us pay for it.
Well, not it's state court.
Yeah, so. It's not us.
People in Detroit.
Michigan, yeah.
They're paying for it.
Yeah, they're paying for it, but that's true. We're not paying for it in West Virginia. We're not paying for your deadbeat judges down here.
And I think that the reporter that did that story is that one reporter in Detroit that's famous for doing those kind of exposés. Because mm-hmm. If you watched the thing, it showed him like standing with a microphone just in front of her house waiting for her.
Yeah, and then the YouTube had several others of his that he had done with other people that were abusing the system.
I can't think of what his name is, but he's kind of famous for doing that.
Yeah, he was pretty good with it, though. What's the shame, though, is you've got people that are getting their trials delayed because of that.
Yeah.
You've got money that's being paid to somebody doing their job, and this is an elected official. Now, I don't know who they were running against, but, you know, somewhere along the line, I don't think people were fully informed on their voting decisions. And that's one of the reasons you should always be informed. Study the candidates, whether they're state or county or federal or whatever. Know who you're voting for.
Now, judges are generally lawyers. That's the first requirement. But actually, in West Virginia and some state court systems, the magistrate judges that we have, those are the ones that hear misdemeanors and felony prelims and things that are in controversy less than $5,000. The only requirement is they have to have a high school education here in West Virginia to be a magistrate.
I'm aware of that. Now, I think we've got pretty good judges around here. The magistrates, though, I question.
No, I think, you know, once they get enough experience, I think they do a really good job. I think there's a lot of kind of on the job type training that goes on.
I just think they should be more requirements of that. I mean, I'm thinking, what if a guy like me got elected magistrate?
That'd be trouble.
Yeah, that'd be trouble in River City. That would not be good. And I don't know, you know, there's got to be people like that. I want more out of the people that are judging us and judging others, that are imposing sentences and things like that. I want them to be good, solid, fair people and knowledgeable, mostly knowledgeable.
Yeah. Well, I would say that would, if you have one argument about this whole system, as far as the magistrate system in West Virginia, it would be that they're not as knowledgeable because they didn't go to law school.
So, yeah. I mean,
as far as fair and impartial, I think they're that, but you know, it would be nice to have a bit more educational requirements for it. But the other thing is, like I said, once they've been on the bench for a little bit, I think that they do a good job because they've kind of had that on the job training.
Well, and you should say that too, since you may appear before some of them.
Absolutely. I love them all.
Now, I don't plan on appearing before any of them, so I don't really care. But if they get their knowledge, their legal knowledge, the same way I do, then God help those that appear in front of them.
Let's move on. The magistrate system was actually a holdover from the old justice of the peace system too.
Right.
Which I think that was, I don't know when West Virginia switched out of that system. Probably while you were growing up, it probably was a justice of the peace.
I think I remember them having justice. I remember Virginia having justice of the peace because my mom got caught speeding there once when I was a kid, and we had to drive to a justice of the state trooper escorted us to a justice of the peace's house because it was on a Sunday. And so he came out to the car from his driveway and heard what was happened and saw the ticket and made her pay the fine right there.
Ooh.
in the Justice of the Peace's driveway. And she said, "I will never drive through the state of Virginia again." Well, just don't speed, Mom.
Well, now, judges, since they are lawyers, they are governed by the rules of professional conduct for lawyers as well. But they actually have special judicial rules, which are sometimes called judicial canons.
Now, judicial canons?
Yeah, that's right.
They get to fire cannons?
there's no cannon firing. It's just another name for kind of law or rule or whatever.
Oh, man. So, I thought they got to have large weapons.
No, there are no there's no cannon play in the courtroom.
Oh, don't.
It varies state by state what these are, but there's a general model code of judicial conduct. And there's four canons, and each canon is actually broken down into subparts. I'm not going to go down into the subparts. I'm just going to go through what the actual four canons under the model code of judicial conduct are.
Please display the four canons thusly.
Canon one, a judge shall uphold and promote the independence, integrity, and impartiality of the judiciary, and shall avoid impropriety and the appearance of impropriety.
Well, that sounds logical.
Yep. The appearance of impropriety is the big one there, because you don't want to do anything that could be misconstrued. That's the one thing you always want to watch out for. And that's something for lawyers as well. They have to watch out for the appearance of impropriety.
So when you hear a judge say, "You didn't see me do that, did you?" You know why they asked, huh?
Yeah. Canon two. A judge shall perform the duties of judicial office impartially, competently, and diligently.
Makes sense.
Makes sense. Canon three. A judge shall conduct the judge's personal and extrajudicial activities to minimize the risk of conflict with the obligations of judicial office.
So in other words, don't do anything outside of his official duties that might conflict with what he's doing in the judging, ruling things.
Judging, ruling things?
Yeah.
Yeah. Canon four. A judge or candidate for judicial office shall not engage in political or campaign activity that is inconsistent with the independence, integrity, or impartiality of the judiciary.
I was wondering if that was just a state thing or a federal thing. I mean, are judges always apolitical?
For the most part, yeah.
They don't run as Republican or Democrat or whatever?
Well, they used to, but they've switched it over, in West Virginia at least, because they used to run as a party.
Mm-hmm.
For the most part, even though they ran as a party, it's kind of been a not a political type thing. As much as it could be.
When judges get picked for the federal Supreme Court, they often are just classified as either liberal or conservative.
Right.
Which may be code for Democrat or Republican, but it's not necessarily. Some of them, I guess, get coded as centrist.
Yeah, and those are highly political things. Like, to be basically be given a federal judgeship, that is probably because you have some sort of political connection, in addition to probably being... hopefully being an accomplished jurist, unlike some of the federal judges which Trump appointed or tried to appoint recently.
Right. Well, I guess they made a big deal back in that appointment that Obama tried to fill the job before he left office, mm-hmm. before Trump took office, is when the one justice died.
Yeah.
And he tried to get that filled, and so they picked somebody. I think they were a Democrat, but they were considered more moderate.
Yeah.
And wasn't as liberal. And so they were trying to get that people to back that because they knew they were going to get somebody that was extremely conservative.
Yeah.
If they couldn't get somebody like that in. So that was the only way to try to sell it, I think.
Yeah, and I think that was actually a pretty would have been a pretty good justice too. So
yeah,
kind of a shame that it languished in this political quagmire in the swamp.
That's all that happens in the swamp anymore. Everything up there is political. You're either on this side or that side, and logic has nothing to do with it.
Well, not all judges actually follow these canons that we just talked about, so we thought it might be kind of fun to talk about some of these judges that maybe got in a little bit of trouble.
Well, along with that, where does, I've heard this word, but I don't really know what it means, jurisprudence.
Yes.
What does that refer to? Isn't that jurisprudence, how a judge acts or something like that? it sounds like a dessert. I mean, like, I'd like to have raspberry jurisprudence for my dessert.
Well, I'm actually a doctor of jurisprudence.
You're a doctor of jurisprudence?
I am.
Really? I've always heard that word, and I never really knew exactly what it meant. But I thought I'd heard it referred to with judges or something. I always thought that meant they have to act good.
Yeah, it's considered a juris doctorate degree is what you have when you become a lawyer.
Oh, of jurisprudence. So it's not doesn't have anything to do. So it's more of a noun than a verb.
Yeah, pretty much.
I thought it was more of a verb. Or a dessert.
If you did that, it would not be jurisprudent to do that.
Yeah, that's right.
You're not a prudent jurist.
Yeah.
No.
That's what I was tying it together with.
No, it's not. I mean, you could say that, I guess, but it's not really a term of art used in the legal field.
That's not jurisly prudent to do that.
Maybe it should be. But before we get into some of these jurists who are not prudent, I think maybe we have some motions today.
Absolutely. We request permission to approach the bench to pay court costs.
All right. Who do we have on the docket?
First on the docket, our good friends from Sleep Number.
Sleep Number.
The mattresses to help you sleep longer and better. I think Snow White or Sleeping Beauty used a Sleep Number mattress. That's why she slept so long.
Oh, Rip Van Winkle.
Rip Van Winkle, yeah, he used one too.
Didn't he have a long beard?
It grew while he was sleeping so long.
That's right. He's probably on a Sleep Number bed.
That's right.
So when you have a Sleep Number bed, you can choose your ideal firmness on each side of the bed, so it's just right for both of you.
You sleep better and you play better. These new beds are so smart, they sense your every move and automatically adjust to you, keeping you sleeping comfortably throughout the night.
There's even an adjustment for snoring. Does your bed do that?
My bed doesn't, but we know what does. We're not going to go into that again, though.
Your CPAP machine.
But I would love a bed that took care of that. Then I wouldn't have to have that thing on my face.
And the thing about Sleep Number beds is they start at just $899.
And 99 cents.
That's right, and 99 cents.
Now that's a bargain.
It is a bargain. You can't put a price tag on a good night's sleep.
You can't. It contributes to your health and your alertness and probably your overall productivity throughout the day.
That's right.
At least that's what I think, if I was jurisly prudent.
In honor of 52 years of football's favorite Sunday, take $52 off any item over $100 from Sleep Number, which, by the way, have you tried their pillows?
Their pillows are amazing. You should try them. So buy $100 worth of pillows and get $52 off.
There you go.
Now, there's a bargain.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. Now, if you visit sleepnumber.com/biggame to get your $52 coupon now through February 4th.
Again, that's sleepnumber.com/biggame.
So get a good night's sleep, and you can thank Tommy and Michael for sending you to Sleep Number.
Well, who do we have up next, Tommy?
Next up are our old friends from DollarShaveClub.com.
You know who needs to join Dollar Shave Club.
Who's that?
Rip Van Winkle.
That's right.
He's got a long beard.
If he goes to sleep on a Sleep Number bed and then wakes up and has a Dollar Shave Club razor, he's set for a big date.
That's right. So you've heard us talk about the amazing shave we get from our Dollar Shave Club razor, especially when we use it with the Dr. Carver Shave Butter. Well, we're here to tell you we are never giving up our membership. In fact, we're adding even more Dollar Shave Club products to our daily routines.
I mean, I shaved with mine right before we came down to record. Michael, do you want to feel my face and how smooth it is? It's like Charlie's butt.
It does look like a butt.
I didn't mean that. Dollar Shave Club makes products for your hair, face, skin, shower, everything you need. They have me looking and feeling amazing.
And it's all their own original stuff. They only use the finest premium ingredients, and they deliver it right to you, just like they do their razors.
Right to your door. That means no more annoying trips to the store, cruising up and down the aisles, looking at shelf upon shelf of what the hell is that and what do I do with it?
I use Dollar Shave Club for just about everything. They've got me covered from head to toe.
And everything in between.
And with gift memberships and e-gift cards available, Dollar Shave Club can help cover the names on your holiday shopping list too.
So, we want you to love Dollar Shave Club as much as we do. So we've arranged for you to try your first month of their best razor along with travel size versions of shave butter, body cleanser, and yes, even the butt wipes for just $5.
After that, replacement cartridges ship for just a few bucks a month. It's the Dollar Shave Club starter set. Get yours for just $5 exclusively at dollarshaveclub.com/court.
That's dollarshaveclub.com/court. Tell them Mike and Tommy sent you.
So now there's some judges that have not followed what they were supposed to do while they were on the bench.
No.
And probably my favorite infamous judge is Oklahoma judge Donald Thompson. And this comes from back in 2005.
What did old Donald do?
Well, I'm going to tell you. Jurors and others in the courtroom kept hearing strange whooshing sounds like a bicycle pump or a blood pressure cuff. It also said that during one trial, the judge seemed so distracted that some jurors thought that he was playing a handheld video game or tying fly fishing lures behind the bench. But the truth was a bit more sordid. He actually had a habit of masturbating with a penis pump under his robe during trials.
So that's, now you know what they wear under the robes. You don't know what the Scottish wear under their kilts. You don't know what judges wear under their robes. It's nothing.
That whole swooshing sound makes a whole different impression on you now, doesn't it?
Yeah, but I mean, here's what I don't understand. How do you confuse that with tying fishing lures?
I don't know. Well, I guess he was down there fiddling with something, and they were like, oh, he must be tying fishing lures.
He was fiddling with something.
It was a lure. The trials during which he had allegedly used the pump included some murder cases, as well as one libel suit where a jury ordered the company that publishes The Oklahoman, a website and a TV station, to pay $3.7 million. So these are big cases, and he's in there with a penis pump on his...
Well, maybe he was just trying to get pumped up for a big ruling.
Now, here's how they eventually caught him. Police built a case against him after one of the officers who was testified during a 2003 murder trial. And from the witness stand, he said he saw a piece of plastic tubing disappear under his robe. And during a break, the officers took photographs of the pump under the desk, so they saw it there. The investigators later collected carpet samples, his robes, and the chair from behind the bench, and they found semen, according to different court records.
Oh my gosh.
And so... he was a former state legislator and a judge, and he had been on the bench for more than 20 years.
And he'd been sexually assaulting the bench.
Or something. I mean, he was sexually assaulting himself. So his court reporter actually told authorities that she saw him use the pump at least 10 times during trials.
And she never said anything?
Well, she said the first time was in 2000, but she did not tell anybody because she didn't want to be found dead in a ditch somewhere. So I guess he was kind of a scary guy. The court reporter and his bailiff were actually fired by the judge after they gave statements against him.
Well... Why would they get fired after giving a statement? It wouldn't somebody step in and say...
Well, they got their job back.
Oh,
but,
okay.
Yeah. But he was like, they gave statements, it's going to be my penis pump. I'm going to fire him.
I don't think I'd want the term whistleblower applied to that one, though.
He had tried to say that the reason the penis pump was there was a gag gift from one of his hunting buddies.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
That sounds like part of the Matt Lauer story about the bag of sex toys in his closet.
Yeah. Now, there's another story, and this is actually a judge that I appeared before in when I was practicing in Florida.
Oh, no.
It was Judge John Murphy, and he actually fought a public defender, and there's video of this one, so you can actually watch it if you Google Judge fight public defender or something like that. It'll pop up on YouTube.
Well, it's better to Google them than them Googling themselves on the bench.
That's right. So it happened in 2015, and the judge wanted the public defender to basically waive his client's speedy trial, and the public defender wouldn't do it. It was Andrew Weinstock. And he was, if you watch the video, you can see that the public defender was actually being very rude and snippy with the judge. Like, you know, I don't know why. I mean, a lot of times these public defenders and prosecutors are assigned to certain judges, so they're always in that same judge. So they work with them on a daily basis.
So, maybe so they someone they might not get along with or something?
Yeah, pretty much. And so the judge said...
They're in contempt of the court, huh?
Yeah. That's not jurisprudent.
No. That's not prudent at all as a jurist.
So the video shows after Murphy, they had this little exchange. Murphy says to him, "If you want to fight, let's go out back and I'll just beat your ass," Murphy told Weinstock as the two men exited the courtroom. And then later, which is off camera, you can still hear it says, no, this is actually still on camera. He goes, "You know, if I had a rock, I would throw it at you right now. Stop pissing me off. Just sit down." And so then they go, he says something about wanting to step outside, and they go into the hallway behind there, and you can actually hear what's going on. And the public defender said that basically immediately upon entering the hallway, he was grabbed by the collar and began to be struck. And there was no discussion, no talk, no time for anything. Just as soon as they're in the hallway, the attorney was grabbed. That's what he said.
Well, that's good. That judge is a man of action.
Well,
not a few words.
The judge says he never struck him. And then the bailiff who went in there said that they were just kind of wrestling around, that there were no punches thrown.
Oh, it was one of those ones like two guys at school that get in a fight and neither one of them really wants to fight. So yeah, hit me. No, you hit me.
Yeah. But you can hear them on the video. They're exchanging it. So eventually after this altercation takes place, it's not very long. It's probably about 15 or 20 seconds. He comes back out and he's out of breath. And the people that are in the courtroom actually applaud him, the judge. I guess the guy must have been just an ass.
That's who they had their money on, huh?
Yeah. And so this guy, this judge, he actually was a colonel in a Green Beret in the Army. And, you know, so he had been in Afghanistan and all this stuff. So probably not the guy you want to try to fight. So he actually had a hearing before the Judicial Qualifications Commission. And he had testimony from his psychologist and basically told the panel that it was a perfect storm of kind of things that took place. That the judge's father had just passed away, and that he had been on a 2-week travel period and just gotten back into town like late that night. And there actually was a deadly shooting in front of the courthouse pretty recently too. And all this kind of fed into this some emotional thing that was going on with the judge right then and there. And the guy said basically that all these things combined in a synergistic way to can create this outcome. And that basically he didn't really say that the public defender had it coming, but he almost did. So it's kind of what his testimony was saying as well. And they gave testimony talking about how he was a veteran and that he had suffered from PTSD from he had been serving in Afghanistan.
This is the judge they're talking about.
This is a judge, yeah. He was actually in the Special Forces and had been awarded the Bronze Star as well as 2 Meritorious Service Medals. So, you know, he had a pretty storied Army career as well. So, I mean, he had, you know, been in Afghanistan, so... They basically put all this forward at the hearing, and the attorney for the Ethics Commission actually withdrew the recommendation that he be removed at this hearing. And the commission ended up recommending a 120-day suspension, a $50,000 fine, and a public reprimand in addition to continuing mental health counseling. And after that happened, the public defender quit from being a public defender. He said, I'm not going to go in this guy's courtroom ever again, which I understand.
Now, that sentence was to the judge or the public defender?
To the judge.
To the judge.
Yeah, yeah,
well, I was going to say, I don't take anything away from the fact that he was in Afghanistan, he served his country and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's certainly to his credit. But if you're going to be a judge, you have to be fair and impartial, and you are in control of that courtroom. everybody there has to do what you say, and you have to maintain the level of decorum in there. You can't stoop to their level, and you certainly can't initiate it because you're having a bad day.
Yeah.
I mean, all those are just excuses.
Now, the Florida Supreme Court actually overruled the Florida Judicial Qualifications Commission and said that he was actually not fit to be a judge anymore, and they fired him.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they did. So it went to the next level, and they said, no, we don't agree with you. We think he needs to be off the bench. They said, notwithstanding his prior judicial performance, Judge Murphy's total lack of self-control became a national spectacle and embarrassment not only to the judge himself, but also to Florida's judicial system. Given the clear erosion of public confidence in the judiciary caused by his misconduct, removal is an appropriate sanction. And they said basically that the severity of his behavior and the VA finding leave open the possibility of future misconduct. So,
well, then what I gather out of that is he kind of screwed himself.
Yeah.
What he should have done right from the very beginning is said, look, I was having a bad day. You know, I got carried away. It was my fault. Discipline me.
Yeah.
They give him a suspension. He serves his suspension and he's right back at work. But he did by bringing all that other stuff in. What's to say that it's resolved now? Just because he had one good fight, that get it out of his system, he's ready to go.
Yeah.
You know?
Now, I appeared in front of this judge, and I thought he was a great judge. So, I mean, that was my opinion of it.
He didn't want to beat your ass?
No, he did not. He did not. We did not fight outside of the courtroom. So
you practiced jurisprudence.
That's right. I think he was into juris jitsu.
Juris jitsu. Well, that's a shame because, you know, you got to hope that judges are unbiased, that they know the law, that they're going to issue fair rulings, they're going to listen to both sides. And I know they're only human, and I guess that's part of the problem. Until we develop AI so the robots can judge us and really be fair and impartial, then, you know, we've got to deal with humans. And humans have got to keep the human emotions out of it and just handle the facts when you're a judge.
Yeah. I was in front of him one time, and I think he had on a Florida Gators tie, and the Gators were getting ready to play like in a national championship or something like that later that week or that the next day or something like that. And he finished up our business, and I said, "Thanks, Judge, and go Gators." And he just kind of looked at me. I was like, "That didn't go over well. I'll see myself out now."
Well, that's because, you know, by mentioning that, then you're making him appear to be biased.
He's got on a Florida Gators tie.
Come on. I know, but now you're siding with him, so you're kind of like, hey, wink, wink, it's you and me, right? We're on the same side. You wouldn't rule against me, would you?
No, that case was over and done with anyway. I was done. I was my business before the court had concluded. So.
But remember what you said at the beginning, even the appearance of impropriety.
Well, that would not have been, that kind of comments goes back and forth a lot, so.
Okay.
So do you have any good stories?
Yeah, I've got a few. It's one of them that came to me. I didn't research it ahead of time. It was one that somebody posted on our page a while back. It had to do with, I can't remember what topic that we did, but somebody put it on there. And it's the one that they have put the cartoon out to the transcript, the people rereading the transcript of it.
Oh, yeah.
Where they brought the guy in before the judge. And,
yes.
And they're back and forth at each other. Now, you don't do that. You know, F you. Well, no, F you. And
yeah.
They're back and forth at each other. Now, there's a judge that should have gone, too. Yeah. I don't know whatever happened to him out of that, but he completely lost control of that situation. I mean, you gotta understand that when you're dealing with people that are coming through the criminal system, they're not all going to be all there, and they're not going to be courteous people and stuff like that. And most of them have a severe lack of respect for authority, or else they wouldn't be running around committing crimes.
Yeah.
So you can't go to their level and do that. But he completely lost control of that situation.
Yeah. The transcript, if you listen to it in and of itself, is pretty funny. But if you listen,
it's hilarious.
Yeah. But if you watch it when
the little animated thing.
Yeah. Where Judge Morty, where Morty and Rick, when they do it.
It is
super funny.
I was rolling listening to that, and what's hard to believe is that it was real. I mean, that when you listen to that played back of these guys reading this transcript word for word, it's like, there's no way this was real. Who would have been that stupid from the bench to have been lured into that?
Yeah. Yeah. I think some defendants are actually very good at pushing buttons.
Do you know what that one was called, in case anybody wants to go look at that?
I think if you just Google Judge Argues with Defendant in Georgia, it'll pop up because it happened in Georgia.
Yeah, that's right. I do remember it was in Georgia. You're right. So yeah. That one was just incredible. If you haven't seen it, it's not. Don't play it at work and don't play it around the kids. There's a lot of bad language in it.
Oh yeah,
but it is hilarious. Now we had a judge, not quite go that far, but pretty close in Putnam County, which is one county over from where we are.
Yep.
And he was handling a family court matter where there was a 60-year-old pastor getting divorced from his wife. And evidently this thing had dragged out for a while, and they had been ordered to sell the house and split the proceeds. And he had been telling people this house wasn't fit to live in, stuff like that, because for some reason he didn't want it to be sold. So he was trying to keep from that. But he and this judge apparently did not see eye to eye outside the courtroom.
Yeah.
And they had several run-ins, and this pastor had filed several complaints against this judge for other things. So this judge really had it in for him. I think what finally got him is, I don't know what the story was exactly, but the pastor went to somebody in the newspaper giving him his side of the story. And when they ran the story, they ran a picture of this judge's house.
Mm-hmm.
As part of the story, the judge, you know, this is his house, and he, you know, did so whatever story was. Well, the judge took that as a direct threat on his family. He starts screaming at the guy. I mean, the guy, the first time he opened his mouth, he was just sitting there looking at the judge, and the judge says, you know, it's like, are you ready to proceed? Yes, sir. Yes, Your Honor, or something like that. And the judge just lights into it. I saw this in the paper. You had it. And he's screaming. He's getting all up here in his voice. He's screaming at him, yelling. And he's like, you put this in, and you've threatened my family. My wife is disabled, and she's at home, and now people know where she lives. My house has been vandalized 4 times, and I'm sure you're directly responsible for it. You know,
wow.
I mean, he's just issuing things at him, and he's telling him that he thinks he's a liar, and his congregation needs to know what a liar he is. Nothing's ever come out of his mouth but lies. Now, this is your fair and impartial judge doing this.
Yeah.
And I mean, he's just screaming at this guy, and this guy's just sitting there just taking every bit of it, not saying a word. And the judge rants and raves at him for probably 10 minutes about all this stuff. And then he finally says, I'm so mad, I there's no way I can rule fairly in this. I'm just going to recuse myself from this case. Well, then the lawyer for the lady, she says, well, Your Honor, this has already been held up for a couple of years, and I'm afraid Miss whatever her name is, she's going to lose the house. Mm-hmm. And we really need, if you recuse yourself, this is going to drag out that much longer. And so he goes, you're right. There's no reason that she should have to suffer because of this idiot over here. And so he says, so I'm not going to recuse myself. But he made the right decision when he said he was going to.
Yeah.
You know, that was the right decision, because that was just absolutely wrong.
Stick with your gut.
But every time he asked the guy, he said, I want to see a financial statement. The guy pulls out a financial statement, and the judge went on ranting at him. And then he said, and I told you I wanted a financial statement. You haven't given it to me. And he holds up. He goes, I've got it right here. Shut up. I didn't ask you to talk. I mean, he was just cutting him off and everything. And even the bailiff, there was a bailiff in there, and he went out. You could see the way he stormed out of the room. I don't know what he was doing, but he storms out of the room on the video. And then he comes back in and kind of slams the door behind him. And he goes, yeah, and he's got a buddy out there, too. He said, the judge said, well, who is he? He goes, some bald-headed looking guy. I don't know who he is. So he asked me, he said, did you bring somebody along to write some kind of story about me? And he goes, no, that's my chauffeur. And he goes, oh, chauffeur, you got a chauffeur. You need a chauffeur to bring you to court.
Like, this guy couldn't say anything.
No, he just absolutely shut up. So then he starts piling on costs. He goes, I tell you what you do, write into that order. And he starts telling the lawyer for the lady, write into that order $500 to so-and-so when they sell the house.
Yeah.
And she gets her split. Add $500 out of his share for this. I tell you what, add another $2,000 for this. And he starts adding things over there. So the lawyer, she thinks, well, this is a pretty good deal. So she says, what about so-and-so? We need to get him $500. Okay, add $500 more in for that. So she's got carte blanche. This lawyer on the other side, she was thinking, yep, we're just going to keep rolling with this because we're getting everything we want.
That's one of those things where it's a little bit too good to be true. You don't want a judge to do that because you're not, it's going to, the worse it gets, the more likely it's going to be appealed.
Yeah. And it did get appealed. It dragged out longer. And this judge, that, of course, all this is on videotape. That's what gets me.
Yeah, this guy's got
to know he's videotaped.
All the family court proceedings. So they tell you at the beginning of this family courts that you're going to be videotaped. And they're all, everything in West Virginia family courts videotaped. Because the way the appeal process works is you appeal the family court to the circuit court, and they basically just pull the video and give the video to the judge or the law clerk, as it were, to watch this appeal. So
they just watch that and make their decision, so you don't have to have another trial, huh?
Exactly.
Well, that's pretty good. But so anyway, he at first, you know, of course, that pastor filed charges, a complaint against him or whatever.
Yeah.
And they said, well, you know, while it wasn't exactly proper, it didn't meet the level of misconduct.
Mm-hmm.
And so they didn't do anything at first. Well, then that was reviewed again, I guess, went to a higher level.
Yeah.
And it was reviewed, and it ended up that they suspended him for the rest of the term that he was elected for.
Yeah.
So this was like 2013, and his term ran through 2016. So they suspended him through December of 2016. So he said, well, that's the same as removing me. And they said, no, because you're still getting your pension.
Yeah.
And you're still getting other benefits that you have, and you can run for office again. Whereas if we removed you, you wouldn't be able to run for it again.
Yeah. It was kind of a middle of the road sanction a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, here's the thing. I hope the people of Putnam County didn't reelect him if he ran again, because he certainly wouldn't deserve it. And he had several other complaints against him too, but I think this guy must have just been kind of unhinged. He must have had a lot of other stuff going on.
Yeah, I don't think he got reelected after that one.
Well, that's good. They were smart not to. Somebody did their jurisprudence not to reelect him. Now, here's another one that I found, and this is one that shows that you can have judicial misconduct in things not when you're not on the bench.
Mm-hmm.
This was Judge Edith Jones of the Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit. And it says that she engaged in conduct that is prejudicial to the effective and expeditious administration of the business of the courts. And this complaint arises primarily from Judge Jones's comments at a lecture entitled Federal Death Penalty Review that she gave at the University of Pennsylvania. In it, part of the comments that she makes are, the United States system of justice provides a positive service to capital case defendants by imposing a death sentence. Because the defendants are likely to make peace with God only in the moment before imminent execution. Certain racial groups, like African Americans and Hispanics, are predisposed to crime, are prone to commit acts of violence, and get involved in more violent and heinous crimes than people of other ethnicities.
Wow.
Claims of racism, innocence, arbitrariness, and international standards are simply red herrings used by opponents of capital punishment. Capital defendants who raise claims of mental retardation abuse the system. The United States Supreme Court's decision in Atkins v. Virginia prohibiting execution of persons who are mentally retarded was ill-advised and created a slippery slope.
Wow, she's got some pretty galvanized opinions there.
Yeah, and in a position like that, you know, and she's got positions like that. That's obviously prejudicial towards what kind of cases she's going to hear.
Yeah.
And she's on the, what did I say? It was an appeal. The
Fifth DCA.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, that's one of the things. How could you feel like you're going to get a fair shake in front of that judge?
Right.
And he couldn't.
And so now, this person espouses their beliefs, and this was her defense. Hey, look, when I'm not on the bench, I'm allowed to say whatever I believe. If I have biased beliefs, that's my business to say that. But it's not. I mean, you're giving away your biases, and why wouldn't you go back and look at every ruling she ever made and see if they tend to appear biased because of these kind of feelings?
Oh, yeah, that would absolutely be something you'd look at. And if you think about it, say she is, like, a racist, and she's only a racist at home, and she honestly, from some sort of objective standard, you could say, well, you know what? Her record's pretty clear. She actually wasn't being a racist on the bench. But, I mean, you still have that appearance of impropriety.
Exactly.
And that's the catch-all. I mean, there's no way to separate the two. You can't have that ability to separate it because it's intertwined. You can't do that. And it's horrible. I mean, how would you feel if you went in front of a judge who basically had said your ethnicity or your orientation, that, you know, she just didn't think much of it.
Yeah, that, I mean, said that you're more prone to it. What she's saying is she's more likely to believe you're guilty.
Yeah.
Regardless of, you're not presumed innocent when you walk in her courtroom.
Yeah, that's not good.
So that was where that case stood. I think that she was eventually removed.
Yeah.
As a result of that, and rightly so, I would say.
Which, that's pretty hard to do, I think we were talking about earlier, is if you have a federal judge who gets removed from the bench.
Yeah, that rarely are they sanctioned for their misconduct. And there's a lot of times, it's kind of one of those things, you know, it permeates a lot of different professions where they don't want to tell on each other for these things. I mean, you know, you had the Catholic Church that would move priests when reports would come in. You have hospitals that have reports on doctors not performing properly, and they just let them transfer from that hospital to another hospital because they don't want to deal with it, but they don't want to say anything bad about them because that's other doctors, and they don't want to talk bad about other doctors.
Or they might feel like they might get sued if they say something bad about them.
Right. Now, you have the same thing with judges. You have judges in certain levels that other ones know that they have misconduct, but they keep it a secret. That it's not known by the general public that these kind of things are going on, and especially if they're elected officials. Well, people need to know to make an informed decision.
And if you think about it, I mean, we gave two examples here that we were just doing a little bit of research about, where basically the first trial level for the sanctioning for the judges basically was going to let them stay on the bench.
Right.
One, you know, one for the Judge Murphy of Florida and the other for the Putnam County Family Court judge.
Right.
The first trier of fact on that said, well, you know, what you did was wrong, but, you know, we're going to let you, you know, slap on the wrist, so to speak. But then, you know, when it goes to the higher level, they're like, no, 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 no. So.
Yeah. And that's good that they have that oversight, because I don't know. It's just, it seems like in certain professions, it's hard for people to discipline their own.
Yeah.
And that seems to be one of them as well that fits in there.
I think that is probably not the case with regards to lawyers in general, though.
I will agree with you.
Yeah, because lawyers tend to, if you see a lawyer do something that is against the bar rules or is unethical, then you actually have an affirmative duty to report that to the bar. And if you don't report it to the bar, then that's an ethical violation for you.
So, that's right.
I mean,
if you knew about it and didn't say anything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's not something that's pleasant to do, but the self-policing part is pretty much important. And I think lawyers are pretty good about that, to be perfectly honest, in my experience. So,
well, they're a litigious group, so they don't mind getting involved.
They are. I have another story about a judge from West Virginia as well. This was a kind of an infamous judge, George Thornsberry in Mingo County. Judge Thornsberry.
Yeah.
You remember hearing about him?
I don't know.
It was back in 2014. He was actually sentenced to federal prison for what he did. So as part of his deal with prosecutors, he admitted that basically he conspired to violate this George White's right to have the attorney of his choice. And he admitted that in order to protect the sheriff at that time of Mingo County, Eugene Crum, he went along with a plan to keep White from providing federal investigators with information that White had sold prescription pills to Crum.
Oh.
So basically he was trying to, like, control the whole situation. Crum owed White several thousand dollars worth of campaign signs and other promotional materials. And instead of paying him that bill, he allegedly sent an undercover police officer to buy prescription pills from White. So basically it was this whole setup type thing.
Right.
So White was arrested and hired an attorney in former Williamson mayor, Charles Butch West, and basically had planned to argue Crum had arrested White over a personal vendetta. And after learning that, Crum, the county commissioner, David Basden, and then prosecuting attorney Michael Sparks devised a scheme to get White to switch attorneys in exchange for a lighter sentence from Thornsberry. So basically they had this whole big conspiracy that if you switch attorneys, you'll get something less. And Thornsberry went along with this whole plan, which they, you know, have evidently contrived in chambers, and sentenced White to up to 15 years in prison. And he spent about 240 days in jail before a judge, Judge Cummings, actually, who was a judge here in Cabell County, vacated the conviction and dismissed all the charges against him. So, yeah.
There's a lot of shady stuff that goes on in the southern part of our county.
Crum, that sheriff, he was shot to death in his police cruiser in April 2013, if you remember.
Right.
And Sparks pleaded guilty to a federal charge and resigned from his role in the plot against him. Basden resigned as part of the plea deal, federal prosecutors as well. So everybody that was involved in that pretty much resigned or was that whatever. So, but here's the interesting thing. Thornsberry also had this other charge against him, and this was basically a charge that he had violated another man's constitutional rights. And this is where it gets pretty sordid. Robert Woodruff was the husband of the judge's former secretary. And prosecutors said that the judge put his business partner in charge of a Mingo grand jury as a foreman, plotted to plant drugs on Woodruff, and then tried to get him sent to jail with the help of a state police trooper.
Yeah, because he was having an affair with the secretary of the guy's wife. Yeah. That's what I was going to say. Yeah. That's why I said there's a bunch of corruption.
And then
there.
Basically, he allegedly hoped that if the husband was in jail, the wife would be forced to restart an affair with him for financial reasons.
Yeah. I remember that. I was going to say, I think that was from the same county that had happened, that he was involved in. So I didn't know if it was the same judge, but I remember that happening. I thought it was a sheriff or something. But
they ended up dropping that. They didn't, because he pled to the other thing. They dropped that part.
So. But I mean, he was definitely involved in.
Something was shady going on down there.
Oh, yeah.
He was actually sentenced to more than 4 years in prison for conspiring to deprive that man of his constitutional rights. And he was sentenced in June of 2014 to spend 50 months in prison. And he's actually going to be getting out of jail pretty soon.
Well, you know, I believe that people in those positions, if they abuse them to that point, they deserve stiffer penalties than your common run-of-the-mill person.
Yeah, because you're basically, you're betraying the public trust.
Yeah, yeah. I think that you are violating something much deeper than just committing the crime itself.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the stuff that guy did is just crazy.
Absolutely.
I mean, trying to get somebody as the foreman of a grand jury to plant drugs on somebody. And like, I mean, that guy essentially, if you think about this Thornsberry, he was pretty much kind of running the county from the bench. Mm-hmm. Like he had his hands intertwined in everything. He was orchestrating different stuff. And that's not good.
Well, you know what they say. Power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely.
It does.
And that's exactly what happens. Some of these guys get carried away reading their own press, and they think that they're much more than mortal, and they can do whatever they want. And that when they get to that point, it's dangerous for everybody.
But you're right, though. Southern West Virginia does have kind of a
reputation for being that way. Yeah, yeah. There's a whole lot of them down there that's the way of life for them. Everything down there is nepotism and, you know, graft and everybody down there, if you're on a school board, everybody there is related.
Yeah.
You know, if somebody gets elected, everybody else, if somebody new gets elected, everybody else there gets cleared out because he's bringing in all his family.
That's right.
So, I mean, it's a shame because there's a lot of waste of resources over those things.
Well, that's going to bring us to
Legal Briefs.
Legal Briefs is the part of the show where we go over different legal terms we've talked about. And I usually quiz Tommy and see if he can remember what they mean.
I know what the first one's going to be.
What is jurisprudence?
I thought it was going to be a penis pump.
That's not my bag, baby.
Jurisprudence is not a dessert. It's the way you're. It's a doctorate.
Well, that's right. If you're a lawyer and you graduate with a JD, a degree, a doctor of jurisprudence, rather. So.
And I always thought it had to do with ethically how you behaved. You're being a prudent jurist or something.
The Beatles song too, wasn't it?
Jurisprudence.
Dear Prudence.
Oh, well, they didn't have the jurist part.
No, it had prudence.
Yeah, it had prudence.
The next term is judicial canons.
Judicial canons can only be fired on the 4th of July. Now, there's four judicial canons that you read, and they have subgroups. We didn't read the subgroups.
No, because there's a lot of them.
But they basically spell out the decorum that the judge is to follow, and one of them is to avoid impropriety or even the impression of impropriety.
Yeah, the appearance of impropriety.
Yeah, yeah, appearance.
That's it. And I mean, they're basically, the judicial canons are just kind of overreaching kind of things that a judge should aspire to do. And the subparts break down like individual.
Do the right thing.
Yeah.
That's what it comes down to. Just do the right thing.
Yeah. Well, you know, when you become a lawyer, you have to take this test called the MPRE, which is the multi-state professional responsibility exam. Mm-hmm. And it's like 50 questions, at least it was when I took it, and it's all about ethics. Mm-hmm. And I took it, I think I zoomed through, I think I was the first one finished in the test.
Wow.
But, I mean, all I did was basically, there's four choices, two were just wrong, one was like really over the top of super ethical and way too much, and then the third one was like the one that was just right. So it was like, I just picked the one that was just right each time, and, you know, I passed it the first time I took it, so. I didn't study much for it either.
So it was a multiple choice, huh?
Yeah, it's multiple choice. You know, you always want to pick the one that was ethically responsible, but not like over the top ethically responsible. Like, you know, the question would be like, your choices are, do you report this? And then next one would be, do you report this? Do you write a personalized letter to the President of the United States? Do you go to church and tell God about it? I mean, it was just over the top too much. You're like, no, you would never do that.
But you turn your head and cough. And
yeah, exactly.
Don't notice it.
So the next term is appearance of impropriety. What does that mean?
Well, that means you do something that people could determine was inappropriate, whether it was or not. It would look bad, such as giving a speech somewhere that you espoused racial views or something like that.
Yep. It might not be something that is actually you shouldn't do, but it gives people the impression or the appearance that
you may not be fair and impartial.
Exactly. Is masturbating during a trial from behind the bench, is that against the law or is it just frowned upon?
Well, it's generally frowned upon. And I can tell you one thing. I'm not buying any fishing lures from that guy.
I wouldn't buy his pole either.
Whatever he's fishing for, I ain't biting.
Well, that's going to do it for Legal Briefs. That was a good one. That was an informative one.
An informative one, I guess. I got them all right, I think, more or less.
Yeah, you did. You did. So I guess I'm going to end on my famous judge joke that I've told to a couple judges and really not got many laughs from.
All right. Well, let me give one plug before you do.
Okay.
Anybody that's interested, Mary, my wife, and I started back up our Still Waiting for Guffman podcast.
Yeah, that's right. It's all about theater and stuff.
That's right. 25, an amateur perspective on 25 years of community theater. So if you're a theater buff or if you just want to hear what it's about, join us on there. It's available on iTunes, just the same. Still Waiting for Guffman.
Now, you guys are going to be starting a new production season for summer shows, right?
Yeah, we just cast the show and getting ready to start that.
Are you guys going to talk about on your podcast a little bit of kind of what's going into it, like a day-by-day type thing? Or?
Well, we will cover it, I'm sure, as we go along.
Yeah.
Like That'll be part of it, yes.
Like, oh, we had our first rehearsal today and, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's kind of what we do is break down the things that are involved in it and tell anecdotes from the 25 years of shows and things like that. So.
Yeah, it's a good podcast. You should give it a listen. If you're into theater, definitely. If you're not into theater, give it a listen anyway. It's still pretty interesting. The stories they tell are...
We hope they're interesting.
They're dramatic.
They're theatrical. All right, now, on with your judge joke.
So there was this guy, and he had never been bird hunting before. And he always wanted to try it. So he went to this farm and said, hey, I want to try bird hunting. He's like, all right, well, we can wrench you everything you need here. And here's your gun and here's some bullets to go out there. He said, well, we got to wrench you a bird dog, though, because the bird dog is the most important part. It goes out and scares the birds up and it'll get the birds after you shoot them and bring them back to you. He's like, oh, yeah, well, I definitely need one of those. He goes, well, we got three different dogs you can choose from. We got Jerry. He's $15 a day. We got Chase. He's $30 a day. And we got Lawyer. He's $75 a day. And he's like, well, why are the prices different? He goes, well, Jerry and Chase are both pretty good bird dogs, but Lawyer's the best. And he's worth every penny. Well, the guy had always wanted to try bird hunting, and he had never done it before. He said, you know what? I better get the best bird dog I can just so I can have a good experience and really see what it's all about. So he takes the Lawyer out there, and sure enough, Lawyer scares up all the birds. He shoots him, and Lawyer goes and gets all the birds, brings them back to him. Just amazing dog, you know, just really smart dog, amazing to watch work. So he comes back in. He's like, boy, you're right. That Lawyer's worth every penny. He's like, well, I'm glad you enjoyed it. A couple months later, the guy gets an itch to go bird hunting again. He goes out there, and he's like, all right, I want to go bird hunting. He's like, all right, well, which dog do you want? He's like, well, I guess I'll take Lawyer. He goes, okay, well, Lawyer, he's $150 a day now. He's like, $150 a day? He's like, well, he's the best, and, you know, that's what the market will pay. He's like, well, what about the others? We're like, well, they're still $15 and $30. He's like, well, you know, Lawyer was pretty amazing. He did a great job, and I don't do this very often, so I'll take Lawyer. So he took Lawyer out bird hunting, and sure enough, Lawyer did a great job just like I did the first time. Got all the birds, had a great time. The guy came back and said, you know, that Lawyer, worth every penny. Amazing job. Well, sure enough, a couple months later, guy's like, you know what? I think I'm going to go out bird hunting again. He goes up to the guy and he says, all right, well, I'll go bird hunting again. And the guy says, all right, well, which bird dog do you want? He goes, oh, I want Lawyer. He's like, Lawyer? He goes, okay, well, he's free. He's like, well, why is Lawyer free? He was so much before. He goes, well, some knucklehead came in here and called him Judge. Now all he does is sit on his ass and bark all day.
Orange, you glad I didn't say banana?
I've told that to a couple judges, and they don't like it too much.
I can only imagine why.
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Doctor, Lawyer, Indian Chief.
And thanks to the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for the use of their recording studio. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, and Still Buffering, as well as many other fine offerings. And please, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you liked us. If you didn't, well then, not so much.
You're not supposed to say that.
You always edit that out though, right?
Usually. Good. This has been Court Appointed. I'm Mike Meadows, your co-host. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurf. And I'm just a dude.
Thanks for listening.